You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
The idea that there is a deep relationship between the divine, humans, and the earth is embedded in the Bible from its very beginning. Our ancestors experienced the natural world as saturated with God's presence. They interpreted their sense of connection with nature as a sense of connection with the holy. And the two creation stories in Genesis give humanity a pretty clear job description: grow families and communities and care for the earth. That's it. Not conquer the earth, not strip mine the earth, not see how much we can accumulate before some fantasy rapture, just care for creation, the sacred household God entrusts to us.
Our words of wisdom are from Genesis chapter 1, verses 27 through 31, and chapter 2, verse 15.
So God created humankind in God's image. In the image of God, God created them. Male and female, God created them. God blessed them, and God said to them,
"Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves upon the earth."
God said, "See, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food."
And it was so. God saw everything that God had made, and indeed, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. The Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to till it and keep it.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
One afternoon, a woman called her husband and asked him to stop by the store on his way home and pick up some organic vegetables for that night's dinner. He went to the store, wandered around, couldn't find anything labeled explicitly organic, and finally asked the produce guy, are these vegetables organic?" The worker said, "What do you mean?" And the husband said, "Well, have these vegetables been sprayed with poisonous chemicals?" To which the produce guy replied, No, sir, you'll have to do that yourself." Each of us have different levels of awareness about where our food comes from and what effect our choices have on the wider world. But one thing that doesn't vary is the Bible's absolute consistency about one thing: human beings and the earth are interconnected, not separate. From the beginning, the Hebrew words for humanity, Adam, and ground, Adama, reveal that we are literally earth creatures, dirt people, soil with a soul. And the more we discover about our environment, the more we see that interconnectedness. And here's where a little Greek helps us out. Oikos, or eco, means household. Nomos means rule. And that's where we get our word economy, the way the household runs. Add logos, which means deep wisdom, to eco, that same oikos, and we get ecologi, the deep wisdom of the household. So, ecology at its root means the deep wisdom or knowing of the environment, our household. And the kind of knowledge we're talking about is the same euphemism Genesis uses when it says Adam knew Eve. If you know, you know. It's intimate, mutual, and life-giving interconnectedness. This is why many modern eco-theologians say that the word most Bibles translate as stewardship may no longer be the best translation. Stewards manage property for an owner, but the original language imagines something deeper, mutuality, kinship, a belonging. Creation isn't something we manage. It's an oikos, a household we belong to. The earth is not a commodity from which we can extract resources without consequences. It's like a relative, a partner, a companion on the journey. The earth is our kin. And if we pay even the slightest attention to our oikos, we see that it's in trouble. We are depleting ecosystems faster than they can recover. We're stretching creation beyond its limits. And as we close out 2025, the evidence is no longer subtle. 2025 has now been officially confirmed as the hottest year ever recorded, globally, nationally, and right here in Arizona. Heat-related deaths in Phoenix reached a new record this last summer, and doctors have begun issuing heat prescriptions, literal medical orders that unhoused neighbors and outdoor workers must find air-conditioned shelter or risk organ failure. When Jesus says, "Whatever you do to the least of these," in Phoenix especially, that includes those whose bodies simply cannot survive the world we've overheated. And despite that, the Supreme Court decided in 2022 to limit the EPA's ability to regulate pollution and greenhouse gases, and is continuing to limit the EPA's authority to regulate wetlands and enforce the Clean Water Act. The goal? Systematically sidelines scientists and public health experts in order to let states, corporations, and industries self-regulate on air and water quality, virtually guaranteeing that everyday people's health and well-being will be sacrificed in favor of the shareholders' best financial interests. In fact, just last week, when everyone is too busy traveling and preparing for Thanksgiving to pay attention, the newly magnified EPA announced plans to side with industry in rolling back the soot rule and dozens of other environmental regulations as too much of a burden on business interests, at the expense of thousands of untimely deaths and incalculable suffering from compromised health conditions. But never you mind. It only negatively affects the poor, children, the elderly, and anyone else who actually breathes air. The corporation's fiduciary obligation to the stockholder is saved! Huzzah! Well, there he goes again, bringing politics into church and meddling in my stock portfolio! Why doesn't he stay in his lane? Friends, this is not just financial or economic policy. It's theology. What does it mean to love our neighbor when the very air our neighbors breathe or can't breathe becomes a political bargaining chip? But the Bible says we have dominion! Come on! It's ours to exploit! I'm going to have my piece of the pie. Wrong, pretentious breath. The whole dominion argument is one of the most misunderstood concepts in the Bible. What the passage does say is that we have dominion, authority, over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air and over every living thing that moves upon the earth. But even this is not what you think it is. God goes on and says, see, I have given you every plant-yielding seed that is upon the face of the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food. Hello? What's missing in that list? Meat. What most people don't realize and don't care to think about is that according to the Bible, we were created to be vegetarians. Sorry. Permission to eat meat doesn't come until after Noah and crew get off the ark. It's kind of a compromise. Check it out. So you might claim to have dominion as the old way of understanding dominion, but according to this story, it's only over the fish, birds, and some farm animals. And then not even for food. You just get to control them. Control them? Is that supposed to be a joke? Have you ever tried to tell a fish what to do? At any rate, the old we have dominion argument doesn't hold water because it's not about water or land or anything people who use the argument to justify their actions think. They don't really want to follow what's in the Bible. And sticking with the Bible, check out what the Israelites thought about the earth. It represented the promise of God's favor, something that could be used but not owned. With apologies to any homeowners or realtors here today, the land belongs to God and God alone. Leviticus says, no land may be permanently bought or sold. It all belongs to me. It isn't your land, and you only live there for a little while. In fact, the original language refers to us living on God's land as aliens and tenants. We are to manage the land as a gift entrusted to us, but never as a possession. So it's pretty clear. Our tradition teaches that the earth belongs to God, and we are called to care for it. Period. We are tenants, guests, aliens living in God's household. Our job is to leave the place better than we found it. After the devastating fires in Lahaina a couple of years ago, local Hawaiian fishing families felt at a loss as to what they could do in aiding the recovery. As they gathered together for support, they were reminded of something they could do that had a broader bearing on the health of their community, expressed in the Hawaiian value of malama aina, care for the land and sea. And as those who make their living on the sea, they are firsthand witnesses to the reality that we currently recover only 5 to 10% of the plastics we produce. 50% are buried in landfills, and some are remade into durable goods, but much of it washes out to sea. Fish, turtles, and even whales eat plastic objects, which can sicken or kill them. So, as Hawaiians committed to malama aina, they understand that kinship, the relationship, the responsibility toward their oikos. They don't speak of dominion. They speak of interconnectedness. So they decided to double down on what they had already been doing. Increased volunteer outings, not to fish, but to collect plastic waste and debris on the beaches and in the tide pools. Will their efforts undo the harm being done to the reefs, fish, and hanu around Maui? Nah. But even in the midst of their own trauma and loss, they are taking action to create hope for the broader oikos, for their environment. There are even glimmers of hope here, close to home. After over 80 years of bearing the toxic burden and health consequences of rampant coal burning and uranium mining, the Navajo Nation is becoming one of the country's largest producers of solar and wind energy. They've built utility-scale solar farms on reclaimed mine land. They're not only supplying clean energy to tens of thousands of homes in the Southwest, they're creating jobs and restoring balance to the Oikos. The Diné ethic of Hodso, living in beauty, harmony, and right relationship with one another and the environment, is right in line with what Genesis imagines humanity's ultimate vocation to be. And please, give me a break. As much as some politicians would like you to think, care of creation is not some woke liberal agenda. It's deeply grounded in ancient indigenous wisdom. It's deeply grounded in traditional biblical tenets. It's also a basic survival of the species issue. And now that renewable energy is demonstrably more affordable than coal, even the utility companies are having to admit that care of creation is good business. And yes, it is a justice issue. Each year, more than 5 million children, most of them poor, die from preventable environment-related diseases. Asthma from polluted air, dysentery from unsafe water, cholera from rising floods, malaria as intensifying heat spreads swarms of mosquitoes. And as much as the media and activists continue to claim that climate change is an environmental issue, it's not. It's a moral issue, and a spiritual issue, and a justice issue. And the kids know it. Back in 2015, 21 young people filed a lawsuit claiming that the U.S. government's support of fossil fuels violated their constitutional rights to life, liberty, and property. The case, Juliana v. United States, sought to compel the government to implement stronger climate change policies. After 10 years of legal wrangling, it was finally, just this last March, referred to the Supreme Court, who, surprise, refused to hear the case. Despite its ultimate dismissal, it did manage to ignite a global movement of youth-led legal actions challenging government climate policies, like the 15 children from Wisconsin who filed a petition this year before the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, saying climate disruption is already harming their health, safety, and futures. And when children have to take adults to court to simply raise the issue of their right to clean air and a livable planet, it tells us that we've forgotten our vocation. Our dominion was never supposed to be about exploitation. It has always been about responsibility, kinship, and care. Creation isn't some abstract concept. It's the air our neighbors breathe. It's the heat they can't escape. It's our oceans being choked by plastic. It's the climate our children's children are going to have to try and survive in. And that's why progressive Christians have chosen to include care of the environment as one of our 8 points. We are Christians who protect and restore the integrity of our earth and all of creation. The earth is our kin. We have a biblically mandated obligation to live in harmony with and defend the health of this oikos of which we are a part. And weighing in with way more authority than even the Bible, my mom taught me to always leave a place better than when I arrived. So, act like you live here. Seems pretty simple, doesn't it? For over 55 years now, churches and other groups have celebrated Earth Day every April, an effort to remind ourselves of our kinship and interconnectedness with our environment. As theologian John Cobb suggested, it's a nice gesture, but we've got enough catching up to do that we probably need more than just a day of reminding. And acting like we live here is probably a pretty good starting point. Not like tourists leaving our trash all over, not like corporate locusts stripping everything bare, not like renters trashing the Airbnb and leaving a mess, but like members of a sacred oikos, a kinship network woven by God, committed to melama aina, care for the land and sea, and hodso, living in beauty, harmony, and right relationship with one another and the environment. While expressing it in a variety of ways, peoples across the world and across cultures have known this one thing for time immemorial. Everything is connected. The divine, creation, humanity. And the more we recover this truth, the better stewards, no, the better kinfolk we become. So let's get out there and act like we live here, because we do. And our kin, the earth, and our children are counting on us. Be well. Don't forget, if you liked what you heard today, buy me a coffee. The link's in the description.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.